Today on The Independent, happy St. Patrick's Day weekend. Pete and I join you from South Bend in Chicago, where we catch up with Notre Dame head women's basketball coach Neil Ivey. Plus, we preview the second week of Notre Dame's spring practice.
Welcome back to The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. And as he noted, I am back in South Bend for my trip to Dixie. Spent some time in Alabama with the family of Riley Leonard. Drove up to Mississippi to spend some time with Deuce Knight, Notre Dame quarterback commitment. And then went up to Troy to spend time with former Notre Dame offense coordinator Jared Parker. So you can look for most of that stuff on The Athletic next week. But Matt, I love the interview with Neil that you'll share with our listeners later. Especially, I'm someone like when I watch women's basketball and you see Hannah Hidalgo play, she is an absolute joy on the court to watch. And it was interesting to sort of hear a little bit about just sort of her process turning into, you know, freshman All-American. I think one of the top players in the ACC.
Yeah, Pete, you covered Notre Dame's past, present, and future at quarterback with your trip, and you didn't come back with an accent that I can discern. So good on you. Looking forward to reading those stories when they come out. Neil Ivey was a pleasure to talk to, and it's interesting. I kind of led the question in with, you know, if not for a certain someone in Iowa City, you know, we'd probably be talking about Hannah Hidalgo a lot more. I mean, what she's done as a freshman is absolutely remarkable, and it's easy to forget about this over the course of a season because the team, you know, is winning big, but they're doing all this without Olivia Miles too. Yeah. And the pressure that probably added on Hannah Hidalgo as a freshman coming in. It's just, I have a hard time recalling a freshman season like this, men's or women's. I'm sure there have been some, but the difference she's made, the impact she's made, and the way she set this team up for a presumed deep tournament run is very, very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, they're ACC champions after knocking off NC State last weekend for the tournament title. And I think that, you know, with Neil and women's basketball, this feels like a team that, you know, injuries aside, at least has the potential to kind of, you know, make a run to get past the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four, like sort of how things were when, you know, Muffet McGraw really had it rolling. And, you know, that was sort of part of the interview as well about her relationship with Muffet and just sort of that part of it. And I think Neil seems to be sort of finding her way a little bit as a head coach. It's easy to forget that she was a first-time head coach when she took this job. Even though she had a ton of Notre Dame experience and some NBA experience. But I think you're sort of seeing some growth from her as a head coach right now as well.
Absolutely. And look, South Carolina has been far and away the best team in the country, probably going to win it all. It's easy to forget that Notre Dame opened their season overseas, losing by almost 30 points to them. And just seeing where the team was then. And again, South Carolina has done that to a lot of people this year, so I'm not trying to single Notre Dame out here, but to have a young team, an injured team, a team that's pretty short on depth so far this season, make the progress it's had and be in the position. I don't want to compare it to the men's team because they're on a completely different stratosphere right now relative to the college basketball hierarchy, but to see both teams playing their best ball this time of the year, I think is very, very encouraging. And you mentioned, you know, year four, in some ways it feels longer because she's such a known quantity, right, commodity around Notre Dame. In some ways it feels like the shadow of Muffet McGraw is still there a little bit. They just unveiled the statue for her during the season, and yet she's the old head when we're talking about Micah Shrewsbury, Marcus Freeman, right, and some other head coaches on Notre Dame's campus. So she knows the place well, and she certainly has the program on track to recapture its glory.
Yeah, well, kind of pivoting to football a little bit, you listen to the interview with Neil at the end of the show. Spring practice gets going again this week after spring break. Pro days, that's spring practice back on Wednesday, pro day on Thursday. Before getting into that, I figured talk a little bit about my trip to see Deuce Knight, because that is the big recruiting story for Notre Dame this cycle. If, you know, he is a top 50 quarterback, left-handed, dual threat, somebody that Notre Dame doesn't have on the roster. And frankly, I don't remember the last time they had somebody like Deuce Knight on the roster. They need to work their tails off to make sure that he ends up on the roster, because Alabama is sort of all on him right now. Some Kalen DeBoer connections there through his family. Ty Freifogel is his stepbrother. So there's some connections there. He did transfer to Lipscomb Academy for 3 games as a junior, which I think at the time felt like a little bit of a red flag as I sort of mined that a little bit more in Lousdale, Mississippi. I felt like it was less of a concern if Deuce Knight's calling the shots about where he's going, but he is a hot commodity down there. And I think he's somebody that a lot of people are have opinions on about where he should go sort of in his orbit. So it'd be interesting to sort of see where he ends up, obviously, but you know, from Notre Dame's point of view, I think Alabama looks at it as like, you can come to Alabama and be the next Michael Penix. Kalen DeBoer coached him at Washington. I'll be interested to sort of see if Notre Dame can play the be the next Jaden Daniels card with Mike Denbrock coming from LSU. Deuce Knight told me that Denbrock was trying to connect him with Jaden Daniels, and that was a conversation he was really looking forward to having. But this is a recruitment that Notre Dame knows is probably going to go down to the wire, whether he takes visits or not. But this is when you hunt big game, this is sort of what it's like. You have to be willing to have the stomach to go the distance on these kind of fights.
I think it's kind of recruiting in a nutshell, high school recruiting in a nutshell in 2024, right, Pete? I mean, The Athletic had a story today, name escapes me, but the top 50 player from Tennessee who committed to Purdue. And he has quotes to Grace Rayner in there of, yeah, South Carolina offered. I mean, that'd be tough to pass up. You know, like that, I grew up a South Carolina fan. It's like, all right, good on you, Purdue, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say Deuce Knight's flimsy or anywhere near that flimsy, but, you know, the context in which we're talking about him, you know, he's not your typical Notre Dame quarterback, not your typical Notre Dame football player when you look at the measurables at that position, a guy they've lacked as long as either of us can remember. You know, from the time he committed, which I believe was the Monday, minutes before the Monday press conference ahead of Ohio State, when the entire college football world had its eyes trained on South Bend.
Yes.
From then till now, aside from the fact that he's a quarterback, he's a big time recruit, I can't remember a bigger time recruit who's been so public in his love for the coaching staff, love for the school, and eagerness to recruit other players to this class publicly. And yet, you know, Alabama, even without Nick Saban, would be tough, I think, for him to ultimately say no to. I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's college football recruiting. It is what it is. I'm not going to ask you to handicap this thing, because trying to get inside the mind of a 17-year-old, you know, when it comes to these kind of life decisions and all the other external factors, I think is a fool's errand. But there's definitely a lot of intrigue there. And I don't know. I would say, well, this goes without saying because he never formally or publicly committed. I will say I feel better about this one than I did Dante Moore a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this one, and I was sort of asking around about this one last week as I was getting ready to go down to Mississippi. It's like, does this remind you of Keon Keeley or Peyton Bowen or Dante Moore? And I don't think there was a case with any of them. You know, and like Lousdale, Mississippi, is there's not a lot of kids going to Notre Dame from that area. Ironically or coincidentally, or what, I'm not sure the word I should use here, but his high school basketball coach is his uncle. And I talked to him and he's like, I'm a huge Notre Dame fan. So the fact that they have one asset or one ally in Lousdale, Mississippi, who likes Notre Dame. And I even asked him, I'm just like, really, there's a Notre Dame fan in Lousdale? I was like, oh yeah, there's about four of us. So that's, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where I think that, you know, they're going to need every bit. They're going to need the Jaden Daniels connection to matter. They're going to need, you know, the fact that they chucked the ball around in their first spring practice to matter. And that was something that Deuce Knight brought up to me unprompted when we sat down and talked last week. So I don't think, is, you know, there were some past recruitments where you felt like it was inevitable that it was going to slip away from Notre Dame. This I don't feel like is one of them, but it definitely is one of those where Notre Dame is going to have to continue to really work hard to keep this kid committed. He is scheduled to be back up for a junior day next weekend or this upcoming weekend in March, so that may help a little bit. But I mean, I think even Notre Dame's to the point where like they may revisit the sort of the no visit policy that they have, loose policy with commitments, that if Deuce Knight wants to ultimately go to Alabama one time and see them, that I don't think Notre Dame is going to risk running him off.
What leverage do they or any school have in a situation like this?
You don't, you just don't have leverage over, you know, borderline five-star quarterbacks. They can sort of call the shots. I, you know, and like, I think some recruitments in the past where a kid has been on the fence or not quite certain, you'll hear the other commits say, you know, we don't really hear from him, or he's not really part of our group chat. And, you know, Deuce Knight's talking about how much Fortnite he's playing with Justin Thurman, who's a running back from Florida, or Owen Strabig, who's an offensive lineman from Wisconsin. So he's, I think he's very engaged in what's going on with Notre Dame, both in terms of what's happening in the practices, what's happening with the recruiting class. You know, it's in, you know, one thing that he mentioned to me that I thought was interesting, getting back to Jaden Daniels, he said that he visited Notre Dame for the Pittsburgh game, and he was with Freeman in his office, and Freeman was watching highlights of Jaden Daniels and talking a little bit about how, like, you know, this is the kind of, this is the kind of dynamic playmaker we need at quarterback, before Sam Hartman started the game that day. So I think that this is just a guy Notre Dame doesn't have, hasn't had in the past, and somebody that they feel like, for how developmental he might be as a quarterback, that this is the kind of kid you really want to develop and sort of work hard and see what you can turn him into be. Because I do think he's one of those kids where if you hit on him, the ceiling is number one overall. I mean, I think he could be that talented.
And there's a ceiling on him as a football player. And I think there's a ceiling on this recruiting operation where if they can land him, and I'm not saying the guy's got to be a first round pick, but he has a productive career at Notre Dame. And again, we're thinking eons down the road here. I just think that would go such a long way with this staff, with this recruiting operation, in a way that other recruits haven't. It's kind of the perfect storm. Again, geography, who you're competing against on the recruiting trail, obviously the position. You know, you would hear Brian Kelly say early and midway through his tenure, for obvious reasons, Jalen Smith was the biggest recruit he got. But why it was so important was he had committed before that 2012 season when Notre Dame was still quote unquote irrelevant and no one really knew, you know, if they would get really, really good again. Obviously they did, but Jalen had committed before that. He was a five-star prospect. He made it cool to go to Notre Dame. Notre Dame obviously did its part by winning a lot of games on the field. But I just see the dynamics with this one, if it goes in Notre Dame's favor, I see that being a long, long, long-term gain for them. And one other thing, as we sit here in March, can you imagine the stomach you have to have in this game as not just in Notre Dame anywhere, where we're having this conversation now and we're like a little anxious. They're going to be like this for 9 freaking months.
Yes.
And by the way, the new early signing period that was just adopted is only a couple weeks earlier. So it's not like it's doing any, it's not in the summer. It's not alleviating any concerns. It's just not to make them out of molehill with everyone, with coaches leaving college football and this and that, but you know, you get in the weeds with a recruitment like this one. And again, there's an element of this with every high school kid they recruit. You got to have a thick stomach because you're, at some places, your job security is going to turn on the whim of a 17-year-old looking elsewhere. And that's just not a mentally healthy place.
I can't imagine making living that way, but there are some very talented people that do.
Guaranteed buyouts. Look, Jimbo Fisher got $76 million out to work. Not the worst deal in the world.
No. I asked Deuce, how much do you hear from Notre Dame? And he's like, every day. I'm getting something from them every day. But yeah, he is, I think on 24/7, he's listed as 6'4.5". I'd say that I'm 6'3", and because we talked for an hour, I guess he went in for a bro hug, and like, he is much taller than me. He is a big dude. And just like, you're like, oh, okay. I don't remember being dwarfed by Notre Dame quarterbacks in the past. Full credit to Ian Book, great guy. Not somebody that was going to blow you away physically. Deuce Knight, you're just like, okay, I can see what the big deal is here. I can see why Notre Dame is putting its, you know, sticking its neck out for somebody like this, you know, taking this kind of risk, because there's just like, there just aren't a lot of Deuce Knights out there. You know, and I'm talking like anywhere in the country. So that's, it's worth taking a shot with somebody like this.
From the future to the present, tell us a little bit about your visits with the Riley family.
Yeah, it was, Riley Leonard's, I met with his parents, sat down, I went to his high school, which was like a Riley, not a Riley Leonard shrine or anything, but like anybody you would run into at Fairhope High School was just like, this is one of the greatest kids of all time. You know, football, basketball, you know, he's got a long-term girlfriend there who also went to Fairhope, who I can't remember the sort of Southern Belle term or the parade that she was in, but like, it just like, there's a lot of
Bama
like,
Rush.
Yeah. I don't know. It was, there's just a lot of, about his sort of growing up in Fairhope. It's, you feel like you're walking into a edition of Southern Living magazine. Like that's what the town feels like. You know, I went, there's this lovely Marriott hotel. That's an old Civil War hospital. You know, they have the balconies like you would see in the French Quarter. They have their own like Mardi Gras parade, but a wholesome Mardi Gras parade. It's just like, it feels like a postcard, you know, that gets you to renew to your Southern Living magazine. I talked to his little league coach who was like, he described Riley Leonard as a Hallmark card, which is kind of that when he said it, I was like, that's probably going to be the headline of the story. I didn't say that out loud, but just like that sort of felt like being down there and getting to know some people in his orbit, you know, and just got a little sense of like why Notre Dame. You know, it's, I think that he said that he told his grandfather when he was sort of breaking the news, like, I think he maybe texted him a shamrock emoji or something. And then he was like, well, my middle name is, you know, like, what's my middle name? It was James. So I think he had a little bit of Irish in the deep South there. So that's, yeah, it was cool to go down there and sort of see what he's coming from. Cause like that, were you there when he came out for media availability?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's like the first impression felt 100% dead on after being to Fairhope, like that sort of aw shucks, kind of wholesome all-American kid. Like there's no, there's like no pretense with him at all. And you know, I think his career at Notre Dame, and this is, I brought this up to Jared Parker a little bit, when I sat down with him, like I felt like so much of the Sam Hartman experience coming to Notre Dame was like, how can you get me, Sam Hartman, ready for the NFL? And with Riley Leonard, it's how can I help you, Notre Dame, make the college football playoff and compete for a national championship? I just think Riley Leonard's disposition and what he's looking for from the Notre Dame experience is going to be quite a bit different from Sam Hartman. And I think the personality differences sort of showed in that first media availability as well.
I can already see the Athletic headline. Hallmark card, Civil War hotels and Southern hospitality, the town that made Notre Dame star quarterback Riley Leonard.
Yes.
The rule of three. No, sounds fun. Look forward to reading it once it's up. I'm not, I obviously know about the town, but not terribly surprised about the character and the way that his people are kind of revering him. I mean, talking to people who worked with him at Duke last year, they say a lot of similar things. He's not too big for anyone. And yeah, even in a brief, you know, 15-minute conversation with reporters, he definitely had that one of a guy's vibe that, you know, that makes us think that he will fit right in just fine at Notre Dame.
Yeah. It's like, so Notre Dame, this was Notre Dame's spring break. You know, what does he do? I think, you know, he's not up at Notre Dame hanging out. He went to the Bahamas with some of his friends from Duke. Like that's still, I think, his tribe a little bit. Like he's, you know, Notre Dame will become that a little somewhat, but I just think that like, you know how awkward it was to talk to Sam Hartman about Wake Forest. Like, I think talking to Riley Leonard about Duke is just like, oh, I love it there. Like, those are my people. Like, Elko is great. Like, there was just not any of that, like, ugh, you know, I feel like I'm treading on this awkward ground here with these questions. So That I think is another difference. He's just like, I don't know. There's a comfort in his own skin that really shows with Riley Leonard that, you know, maybe was not there 100% of the time with Sam Hartman.
I'm glad you told us what he was doing for spring break, because when you asked that question, with the way this was trending, I thought you were going to say he was doing missionary work overseas. And I'm like, God, we're going to have another Tebow. No. The whole, like, he's so perfect, he's one of ours. It was trending in that direction. Spring break, though, clearly he's one of the guys. And
yes,
good on him for enjoying his youth while he still has it. One other bit of, I guess you'd call it housekeeping, because this thing is moving very, very slowly. The powers that be decided on new revenue distribution and a long-term deal with ESPN for the expanded college football playoff. They did not announce how many teams there will be, other than to say that there won't be fewer than 12. I think we all think it'll be 14, but honestly, at this point, Pete, every week, it seems like someone goes in there with a new bad idea that they want to float out there to the media and get pilloried for by the public. So I don't know where we're going with this.
I think they call that socializing the idea.
Oh my God. I've seen that word. I've never heard that word once in my life. And it's like the new
arm talent for quarterback analysis from like 8 years ago. It's just like, no, you're just floating the idea. You're not socializing the idea.
We're socializing on a podcast about
the playoff thing. Great. It's going to go on to 2031. Awesome. ESPN is going to have it. Super. The automatic buys, I've already said that it's a terrible idea, because it is. We'll see.
Seem like that's going to happen, but
yeah. And if those go away, does Notre Dame's automatic qualification, if they're in the top 14, go away? Because that was, I feel like, a bit of a carrot to appease Notre Dame, where they gave something with the no buy. I felt like they may have been in position to receive something with automatic qualification if they're ranked in the top 14. I don't know if that will continue into the fine print whenever this thing gets finalized, which I'm sure will be on a future Friday afternoon right before a big game to take the focus off the sport on the field, because administrators know what we love to talk about is boardroom meetings, not actual football. So hopefully they can keep that train rolling.
The breakdown, according to all the reports out there, with the revenue model, Notre Dame will get 1%. For comparison's sake, the SEC and Big Ten will get 29%, ACC 17.1%, Big 12 14.7%. You see 1% and 29% next to each other, and you think, oh my God, they're not making anything. But then you realize in the Big Ten's case, they're dividing that 18 ways. And as Ross Dellinger of Yahoo notes, Notre Dame and Independence, which I guess is only UConn now, if they qualify for the playoff, they'll get an additional $6 million payout. But again, we'll see how this thing sorts itself out as far as automatic bids. Notre Dame just needs to be in the top 14. I mean, that's not asking a whole lot of them to make this more years than not.
No, that's top 14 is 9-3 territory. In the 12-team model, where you essentially have to be 10th, that's 10-2 minimum. So that could be a big difference for Notre Dame. I like the 12-team model. The 14-team
model, I think I like it. We haven't seen it yet, Pete.
Yeah. Could I do? I think 14 would be fine. I just hate the multiple automatic qualifiers from one league. I think it's ridiculous. So I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. But look, this year at least, Notre Dame needs to be in the playoff. If they are in the playoff, rather than had a really good year, and that will be sort of one of the lead stories of it. So, once they get back at work for spring practice on Wednesday, we might see a little bit more of that. But I don't know. I'm sure that there will be infinite college football playoff expansion news from here to eternity, because that's just sort of how the sport operates right now.
Notre Dame re-kicks off practice number 2 on Wednesday. Pro Day is Thursday, first day of March Madness. I bring this up because we're on the subject of the playoff. I saw Wisconsin announce their spring schedule this week, and they said there's not going to be a spring game because they're basically, for lack of a better term, winterizing Camp Randall to get it prepared for the event that they have to host a playoff game. I know that's a concern on every school and administrator's minds going into this thing. That's the first school I've seen actually publicly put something out there about here's what we're doing and here's what it's going to take to make that happen. I know you've brought it up in conversation. I think you've even brought it up on the show, but like, have you heard any kind of proactive things that Notre Dame is doing to get the stadium ready?
I think that they're still in the discussion phase, but I talked to a couple of Notre Dame officials just yesterday, actually, about it, and they felt they presented an air of confidence of like, we have enough to move forward on this. We might not have enough to speak publicly on the record for a story about it, which is kind of what I want to do. But in terms of ticketing, the rules, how, you know, what you can, is it a neutral site game or is it a home game? You know, the extras around that, I think Notre Dame has a pretty good handle on that, but they're still, I think, waiting to have everything blessed by the College Football Playoff before they can go on the record about it. But it, that will be a fun story to do. It just made me more of a summer story than a spring story. But I mean, in terms of winterizing the stadium, they've already done it. You know, they've had, the stadium series for the NHL already. So that's, I don't think that will be too difficult. But I think from a ticketing point of view, that's what I'm really interested in about, because it's like, you've got a national fan base, right, short notice. Like, how does that work? How do you price it? Is it priced on the opponent or is it priced on the event or both? I don't know. That kind of stuff is really interesting to me. So hopefully that's should be a story for the summertime that I'm looking forward to sinking my teeth into a little bit more.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to seeing Notre Dame back on the practice field next Wednesday. With that, we will lead into our interview with Notre Dame head women's basketball coach Neil Ivey. The Irish will host the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament next week.
Spring is around the corner, and that means it's time to get back outside with Roback, one of our favorite brands at The Independent. Whether it's polos, Q-zips, vests, crewnecks, or hoodies, Roback is our go-to apparel when it comes to the golf course, gym, sitting around the fire, or even recording a podcast. You've seen Roback sponsor former Notre Dame athletes Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. And if you've attended a Notre Dame game, you've surely seen the Shamrock Polo around tailgates and in the stands. Roback goes by the motto, crave activity, and there's no better apparel to fit those needs. Listeners of The Independent can get 20% off your first purchase by using the promo code IRISH at roback.com. Again, that's 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more on your first order with the promo code IRISH. Visit roback.com.
We're now pleased to be joined by Notre Dame head women's basketball coach Neil Ivey, fresh off winning the ACC tournament. Coach, what was that like? You were the regular season champions last year, the tournament champions this year. What was that like, and why do you think you guys were playing your best ball down the stretch there?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, I'm so proud of this team, and it was such a hard road. You know, the ACC conference is so tough. It's so much parity in the league, and so many teams are so talented. So I was really, really proud in my first, you know, championship as head coach. Like, that was a dream come true for me. It was part of my vision, and just to see it come to life, I think it was just a surreal moment for me. And I was really proud of my team, just the way we've responded in the last couple of weeks. We've had a lot of adversity, and they've just battled and rallied, and we found great cohesion together, and we're just peaking at the right time. So I'm just proud coach and you know, kind of like a proud mama right now.
I was going to say, you've won plenty, both as a player and as an assistant coach. How different is it when it's your program, so to speak, and you're the one winning it?
Yes. I mean, it feels so different, because I feel like when you're watching from the side, having a chance to watch, you know, Coach McGraw, it's different when it's you, you know, it's different when you're holding up the trophy. And it felt so surreal, and it's an honor. It's an honor to represent this university, and it's an honor to coach this team. They're amazing. And I have so much fun. It's obviously very difficult. It's really hard, but we love each other. And it's been just so rewarding to feel like the work you're putting in success is coming from that. So I'm super grateful and blessed.
What was that moment like? It went viral afterward. You go on the set of the ACC Network, and there she is, Coach McGraw, and you're hugging her from behind, and everyone's retweeting and sharing on Instagram. I think that made everyone who's a Notre Dame graduate feel good in that moment. To be able to share that moment with her, I mean, what was that like?
I mean, it was special. You know, I love that she's still kind of, she's a part of the league, you know, being an analyst and getting a chance to see her a lot and talking to her. And, you know, the fact that she was there, when I saw her, I had to run over to her, give her a hug. And I know how proud she is of me. You know, she's my mentor. She's my role model. She's somebody I adore. I love her so much. And so, and I know she loves me the same. And I know that she was a proud mom watching me. And just having her there, sharing that watching the you know, the confetti come down and knowing that I'm doing what I love. And she's a big part of my success. And she helped me get to this point and gave me an opportunity. And I learned so much from her. So I knew that was going to be a special moment for her. And I just wanted to share that with her.
What's it like for you now that you're toward the end of your fourth year here? I mean, it's firmly your program, but how different does it feel for you? You're succeeding the legend, your mentor, the person who coached you and yes. helped you as a coach. Do you think there's been like a dividing line where, I don't want to say you're out of her shadow, so to speak, but when you really felt like, mm-hmm. I know what I'm doing here. This is year four. This is my program. I don't need to look and see what they did in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's definitely hard following a legend. I think anybody's following some, you know, Hall of Fame coaches, storied programs, and she's been here for so long. Like, I know that kind of takes time, just redirecting the look of it, the leadership, and she's got a statue right out front. But I honor her so much that it doesn't bother me. You know, it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to follow her. So I don't see it as a negative. I don't see it as shadow. I just felt like when I came here, I wanted to put my passion, my stamp. I know I'm a little different. My energy's different. I coach differently as far as like who I am on the court. And you could tell the shift, I think, in our culture. You see the shift in our fans and in the energy that's kind of happened, you know, for women's basketball, but definitely I feel like for my team right now. I mean, I have some tremendous players on my team, you know, Olivia Miles, Hannah Hidalgo, Sony Citron, so many household names that are on my team. And I think it's positive regardless at the end of the day. A lot of energy, a lot of support, passion for this program. And like I said, it's an honor to follow her.
You mentioned the energy around women's basketball right now, and it does seem like the sport itself is having a moment. You see the ratings, you see the sold out crowds, you see the excitement around Notre Dame when you guys win last week. What's it like to be a part of that and to be a part of this kind of breakthrough moment, especially since, I mean, you were one of the first WNBA players. You won a national title at Notre Dame when people didn't necessarily think that was possible. To Right. see the game grow the way it has and get its recognition, how important is that to you?
It's so important and it's so exciting. I feel like I hear a lot of people saying like they know more women's college basketball players than they do the men. And I think that's just a huge shift for us in the right direction, more eyes, more viewership, which means more opportunities, you know, this growing the game. I think that's as coaches and especially former players, that's all we want. You know, Dawn Staley's of the world, like you want to grow the game and the game is growing. The momentum from last year has not slowed down at all. And I'm just excited to see how the future is going to be. And if you look at some of our best, you know, I guess the top five team right now or the top five players, two of them are freshmen, one being Hannah, one being Juju. So it's like the game is in great hands. The future is incredibly bright. And I'm excited just to be a part of it, to watch it and to kind of help it, you know, grow, especially here at Notre Dame.
It feels like, especially within the last couple of months, a lot of football coaches, a lot of men's basketball coaches has had this kind of boogeyman aspect whenever they talk about NIL and the transfer portal and all the changes that have come to college athletics. But NIL-wise, it seems like the women's game is greatly benefiting. It seems like they're getting in front of a lot more eyeballs, making a lot more money. I'm curious your thoughts on the landscape as a whole, and how have you utilized just recruiting in this day and age as a head coach in 2024? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, NIL is definitely, it's changed every year. I think everyone's still learning how to navigate it, myself included. You know, I think it's amazing, you know, for the student athletes to be able to monetize their name. I credit Notre Dame. We're doing a fantastic job of, investing in, you know, in our players. And I think we have an incredible team here. It's called the Gold Standard that they do a great job of educating our players, but also giving them incredible opportunities. We have a really great collective and it's great. You know, I think, but again, there's so many rules. It's an ever-changing space. And so I know all coaches are just adjusting to it, but I'm very fortunate with how the athletic and our leadership, what they're doing for us, our student athletes, and just trying to continue stay competitive in this space. I know a lot of schools are doing a lot of things. And so we're just trying to stay competitive and learn and grow as much as we can. And I'm fortunate that we have a powerful brand like Notre Dame that supports us and that we can utilize with our student athletes. And like I said, the support, the brand is so massive that NIL has been very, very good to us.
Is there a part of you as a former player, it's like, damn, I wish I had that when I was a national championship player. Imagine how much money I could be making at 21 years old.
I know. it's crazy to think about it, but you know, I'm just, you know, as former players, you always feel like you're paving the way. And I'm just happy that, you know, our current team and these athletes right now are getting this opportunity that we didn't have. You know, you always want to, you want to leave it in better for the players that come behind you. And I'm happy that they're getting this opportunity. And you know, this is something that's life changing for them. And I think that's wonderful.
I'm curious, you're talking now right after you came off the practice court. Next week's the tournament. Last week was the ACC tournament. I'm always curious how you, I hate to say kill time because you want to maximize the time, but to have this kind of cold stop right after a victorious triumph last week, mm-hmm. and then get prepared for the biggest games of your season. Mm-hmm. How do you utilize this week? What's this week like for Notre Dame women's basketball?
Right. Well, I gave them a couple of days off because, again, shorter roster, we were exhausted and playing three games in a row, Louisville, Virginia Tech, NC State, like three tough teams. Like, we really needed to reset. And so that's what we did. Got back in the gym, going to ramp it back up, find out who we're playing on Sunday, and, you know, be scout driven, figure out things that we need to do to prepare for if we play on Friday or Saturday next week. But I definitely felt like they needed time. They needed time off. And I think that's going to be very beneficial for us, especially, like I said, with a short roster. We were on spring break this week as all students. And so my practice squad's coming back this weekend, so I can do a little bit more tomorrow and Sunday to prepare once we find out our road.
Shame on me for waiting 9 minutes to ask about her, but Hannah Hidalgo, I mean, if not for someone in Iowa City, I think the nation would be talking about her a lot more right now. But what did you see out of her in high school that led you to believe she could have this kind of success this soon and be this kind of a game changer for your program?
Right. I always felt like she was separated herself in her class, you know, as a point guard, the way that she played with her tenacity, her defense, and her passion for the game. Just there was nobody in her class that played that way. And so I knew that she was going to separate herself when she got to college, but you never know when the light bulb's going to click on. You never know like when that's going to happen for freshmen. And she was thrown in the fire with us. You know, she took on a big assignment, and I thought she hit the ground running right from the beginning. I also felt like I knew in USA basketball, she won the gold medal with the U19 in Madrid, was an all-star five player. So one of the five best players in the world. And she lit that stage on fire. It was a big, big stage, and she was ready for it. So I feel like her confidence and her swag and her competitive nature has allowed her to do what she's doing this year.
How did she have to kind of mature and take on more, knowing Olivia Miles was going to be out as long as she has been? And how have you guys as a team had the success you've had without Olivia?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Liv does so much for us, even though she's not on the court. You know, she's been an inspiration to everyone. She works so hard. She looks great right now, but I think she's done a great job of kind of leading from the side, helping Hannah, just, again, practicing with us and just being there, being an inspiration. Like, I keep her engaged in games. She's looking at the defense is like, coach, like this, you know, I'm always asking her, what do you see? You know, so just staying engaged. She's doing it from a different perspective, which is going to help her next year. But yeah, I mean, Hannah knew coming in, you know, like there was a possibility that, you know, Liv might be out in the beginning of the season. And she just basically came in and like, I'm going to do whatever we need. And she's had some learning curves, you know, some things that she's learned by going through it. She never had anyone to show her out on the court. As far as, you know, obviously Liv on the court would have shown her how to run different things and what to see. She's kind of learned it on the fly. And I think she's done a very, really good job of adjusting to some of the lessons and some of the growing pains that we've had as a team. And I know that she's probably had, you know, some moments where she's grown a lot or learned a lot just by having mistakes or just learning from her mistakes.
Not to look too far ahead, but as a coach, you got to be dreaming about having them both healthy together next year, right? What that'll look like.
I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. I mean, it's going to be amazing. Like, it's going to be so exciting for women's basketball. It's something that we've never seen before. And I cannot wait for them to get on the floor together.
We had Micah Shrewsbury on the show a couple weeks ago. I think it was the day after the Virginia Tech game for you guys. And there was a photo that went viral of him and Marcus Freeman together at that game. It seems like there is a lot of support among a lot of the sports and coaches right now at Notre Dame. Feels like you just got there, but in some ways you're the old head compared to those two. What's that relationship like between the three of you and everyone else, all the other head coaches at Notre Dame, and how has that support really made a difference for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the support is amazing. You know, this place, we talk about being family, and that's exactly who we are. You know, Coach Corrigan won a national championship last year. He's at games texting me, emailing me, Chad Riley in the title game with soccer. Like, all the coaches, like, they're phenomenal. Coach Halfpenny, like, Salima, I could go, the list goes on and on with all of our coaches. All of them love and support each other. We all support each other. But in particular, Coach Freeman and Micah. Micah's next door, you know, so we get a chance to really talk a lot. We see each other every day. I'm always asking him questions, picking his brain. I'm always watching his practices and vice versa. He comes to mind. So we have a lot of mutual respect for each other. He coached Jaden, my son. So I knew him before he came here. And then Coach Freeman, you know, again, he is just both of them high profile coaches, but they do a phenomenal job of being so supportive. Either it's a text, either it's, you know, popping by practice or, you know, always coming to the games. They're very intentional with their support and me knowing that they're there if I ever need them. And we're all going through the same thing. We with high expectations and an incredible prestigious university. We all understand what that feels like. And we're just very intentional about making sure everybody knows that we're all here for each other. So I'm very grateful to have this Notre Dame athletics family that I have here.
You're all going to have a new boss in a couple of weeks when Pete Pavakwa takes over full time as athletic director. I'm curious, he's been around since the summer, I believe. What have those interactions been like? What have you gotten to learn and know about him as he gets ready to take the reins here?
Yeah, he's awesome. You know, former alum, so he gets it. You know, he has that pride for the university, understands what we need, very forward thinking, you know, very, he's just a genuinely great person and very smart. And he's excited about, he's bringing like energy and a passion to the athletic department. He's very approachable. You know, he's been in the locker room a lot, my locker room a ton. And I've had a chance to sit down with him multiple times and just being there and shooting me a text and popping by practice. And like, he's doing a great job of just asserting himself here. And I know he's, you know, he's obviously following another AD legend in Jax Warwick. And he's done a great job of kind of just being a fly on the wall, you know, being a sponge under Jack. And I'm excited for his new leadership.
You know, the NCAA tournament's coming up. I want to go back for a minute, and obviously the result wasn't what you wanted, but to open the season overseas like that, what did that mean? How educational was that experience, excuse me, that experience for your team and to have that platform for women's basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I knew that I was a big 10. It was a tall test, tall test for me. And I wouldn't change it for the world. I think it was an incredible experience. I have so much respect for South Carolina and Dawn. You know, this is the first collegiate game. It was a historical moment that I was honored to be a part of. And so much education, like you mentioned, we got a chance to really see Paris. It wasn't just the game. We had a community give back with 100 kids. We did an Under Armour basketball clinic for a bunch of young girls, 100 girls, and got a chance to be role models, got a chance to inspire, going to the Eiffel Tower, the Louvre Museum. So we got a chance to do a lot of different things where I knew that this was going to be life-changing for our team. And that's my main goal coming back here, is to try to make an impact, not just in South Bend, but globally. And so for us to be able to do that, to bring our program on an international stage, I thought was really important. And I'm just grateful. And I feel like, you know, we did a great job of kind of growing the game. And the game was, you know, obviously more amazing for South Carolina, but the stage was so incredible. It felt like a Final Four game. You know, we got a chance to represent our university and Under Armour brand, and, you know, made some great connections. And it's, like I said, it's an experience my team will never forget. So it was a once in a lifetime event. And I was so blessed to be a part of it.
As you get ready for the NCAA tournament and get ready to host next week, can you calculate just how much your team has grown since that opening night loss to where they are now coming off an ACC tournament title?
Yeah, we've grown so much. You know, our roster looks a lot different. You know, players have had to step up and roles have been redefined. And, you know, everyone's just doing a little bit more. We're rallying right now without some of our players and some of our teammates. And, you know, we're just excited to be playing. We're excited to be dancing. And I'm really proud of the growth. And we've really responded to all the challenges that we faced this season. And we're a completely different team. You know, I feel like we've really consistently establish our identity the last few weeks. And I think that's what we needed to do head into the ACC tournament. And now, you know, being ACC champs, checking off that box of something that was part of our goals. And now, you know, excited to be able to dance in the tournament.
Awesome. Well, Coach, appreciate you making some time for us on this show. Best of luck next week with the NCAA tournament, and congratulations on winning the ACC tournament.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.